Hello, and welcome to Medical Musings with Dr. Joanne, here at 88.5 KRFY, Community Radio for North Idaho. I am Dr. Joanne, and I hope you'll enjoy the medical topics that I have chosen to present at 8 a.m. the first Monday of every month. You can also catch the show at 8 a.m. on the third Monday, and if you enjoy podcasts, you can listen to a podcast of the show at krfy.org and select the podcast tab. September was designated as National Yoga Awareness Month in 2008 by the Department of Health and Human Services, the NIH, and the National Center for Complementary and Integrative Medicine. The goal of the month is to inform the public of the health benefits of yoga that inspire a healthy lifestyle, and to improve physical and mental health along with mindful breathing, and to reach balance and wellness in our lives. It is interesting that September was chosen as we transition from summer to fall, a time to refresh our bodies. My guests today are Toshi, a yoga instructor, a yoga teacher, and a yogi, and Denise Imbricki, a yoga practitioner. Also here with me in the studio is Susie Perez, who I call my executive producer. Hello, Susie.
Good morning, Dr. Joanne. I wanted to let the listeners know a little bit about you before we get started. Dr. Joanne Royans is a longtime KRFY volunteer, previously hosting segments of Otto's Eclectic Mix, and is now hosting Medical Musing, which plays the first and third Monday of the month at 8 a.m. She is a retired pediatrician who has lived in Sandpoint since 2010. She previously worked in a pediatric practice in Columbus, Ohio for over 30 years, and then covered at Sandpoint Pediatrics. As the media spokesperson for the Ohio chapter of the American Academy of Pediatrics, she contributed to print, online media, radio, and television. She is the mother of four adult children, and we are fortunate to have Medical Musing as part of our Monday morning programming.
Thank you, Susie. Toshi and Denise, why don't you introduce yourselves to our listening audience?
Good morning. Appreciate the opportunity to be here. My name is Toshi. I've been immersed in the yoga community for quite a while. I would say the better part of 20 years, and have practiced and taught many classes, and I'm excited to be here.
Hi, I'm Denise, and I've been involved in learning about yoga, learning the practice for at least 18 years. Started because I was getting tired of doing weight training or aerobics, and it just happened to be some class that was being presented at the fitness center where I lived in Southeast Pennsylvania. And I found out as I continued with that, that it offered a lot to me, more than just physical exercise.
Well, yoga comes from the Sanskrit word yuj, or which means unite. So I guess basically you've united with your yoga. Those who practice yoga are united with the universe, as I said, and their supreme consciousness. When I think of yoga, I think of maintaining the isometric poses followed by deep breathing, and I like the corpse pose, which is just lying and meditating at the very end. I've only taken like two sessions at a rec center with a yoga teacher who also had a very well-known studio in Columbus, Ohio. A little bit about the history of yoga, because I thought it was really interesting because there now is so much yoga teaching in the U.S. and around the world. The first written history of yoga began as early as 2700 B.C., in the Saraswati Valley civilizations. By 500 BC, there were four main types, and I don't have to describe too much, but it was interesting to me, Gayan Yoga, Karma Yoga, Bhakti Yoga, and Raja Yoga. Gayan is one of the four outlined in Hindu philosophy. The others, the Karma Yoga, the yoga of selfless action, Bhakti Yoga, the yoga of devotion, and Raja Yoga, the yoga of meditation and mind control. In the early centuries, there were actually written Yoga Sutras, collection of aphorisms or concise, iconic expressions of truth or principles, which were then handed down. Continued throughout from 1050 to 1450 AD, but it really wasn't revived until the 19th and 20th centuries when yoga was introduced to the Western world in 1893. So that's a long time ago. 1919, that the Yoga Institute in New York was developed. In that time, too, a German bodybuilder combined bodybuilding, gymnastics, and yoga. Mm-hmm. And but, of course, in 1948, Hollywood caught on. And suddenly, I think there was an explosion along with the discipline of Ashtanga yoga, which is actually what I took. And then I realized that it says power yoga. But anyway, that was what they taught through our rec center those years. It's interesting to note that originally there was no charge for classes, as the teachers were supported by gifts, with an emphasis on anti-consumerism and strict vegetarianism. Now, with the proliferation of yoga studios, instructors, practitioners, retreats, yoga is worldwide, and it could be because of air travel or people disillusioned with organized religion. Transcendental meditation really came in what, the 60s or 70s? And again, as Denise said, a form of exercise that was more pleasant or really interested you more after spending time lifting weights and running on a treadmill. The retreats now are so fancy, it gives people an opportunity to travel to fascinating places. So how do we reconcile the anti-consumerism of the original teachings with the current focus on studios, clothing, retreats, and settings that do have this amazing scenery? There was even a book by Andrea John in 2015 called Selling Yoga, From Counterculture to Pop Culture. And then, of course, there's Elizabeth Gilbert's Eat, Pray, Love. And you either read the book or saw the movie about her time at the ashram and her path of self-realization and knowledge. So tell us about an ashram and what it really means.
Well, simple explanation is it's the same or similar setting to what we know as being a retreat, generally an opportunity to be a little bit withdrawn from the bandwidth and the noise of the fast-paced city life, and more of an opportunity to slow down, connect with what's going on inside. And generally, like most retreats, there will be a guru or a leader or a guide to help in those processes.
Have you been on a retreat, and where?
Well, as far as yoga is concerned, I personally have never visited an ashram nor traveled to India, though that is very common within the community. So I would say that it's been a while since I've had an organized formal retreat, but I do find opportunities to create my own seclusions within nature and kind of absorb in that way.
Do you teach a specific style, and did you train in a specific style, or tell us a little bit about how you teach?
Yeah, I came across yoga myself. It's similar to Denise, just for a physical practice that I didn't have much understanding of, and I had been a high-level competitive tennis player through my 20s and early 30s, and we would always have a little bit of a break in the season for about 3 months in the winter, and I really was just looking for some way to cross-train and keep myself physically diligent in that time with no real knowledge of yoga other than when I witnessed people leaving the yoga studio in my community. I always saw them leaving with a glow about them. They were always incredibly slick with sweat and just looked like they had, you know, taken advantage in that way, and so that's kind of how I happened into it. And I would say that I believe that I had taken about 2,000 classes before I ventured into a standard 200-hour teacher training. And I did a 200-hour teacher training in the local studio that I had been immersed in for quite some time. And, you know, though there are a myriad of styles, what I've always gravitated to is what you mentioned earlier when you said Ashtanga or power yoga, which is kind of the more westernized offerings. And I look to see it as, you know, a gateway into getting deeper into the Hindu philosophies and the other peripheral aspects that are tied in with yoga. But the actual practice that I teach myself would be what's called power yoga, and that is a sequencing of different body postures, asanas, in conjunction with breathing techniques or moving with the breath through these postures.
So what's the most number of classes you've taught in a week, and what do you usually do now?
When I was at my most active within the community, I had a regular schedule that consisted of 21 classes per week. And each class would generally be a 60 to 75 minute offering. And I probably kept that pace for 3 to 5 years. And this was in a different community. I had stopped teaching for about 5 years before moving to Sandpoint. And when I moved here, I was just put in touch with a great leader of a local studio. And so now I teach between 2 and 4 classes a week.
So much more calm, I guess I'd say. And it's not your total life, but I'm sure it's given you an awful lot of reward, basically. Denise, why don't you tell us how you got into it, but have you been to different studios and used different methods? Have you ever gone on a retreat again?
Sure. I've been to 3 retreats, workshops, actually all of them over in Montana, outside of Helena. And the first one was perhaps only a year or so after I had taken my first yoga class. And I went in there and I said to the teacher, I only do this once a week. Do I really belong here? And it was clear from the beginning that there's room for everyone. There were people in the class that were teachers, mm-hmm. and then there was myself at the other end that was just starting out. And one of the things that I most appreciate about yoga with all the teachers that I've had, different studios, different parts of the country, is if it's a good teacher, and I've been fortunate to have excellent teachers, there's room for everyone at every level and every ability. In I go to 2 different studios now, about 2 to 3 times a week is about what my body can tolerate. I'm old. there's one woman there that started as part of a rehab from a stroke, and another person there in class started perhaps 6 years ago because he was having lots of back issues that were not being addressed and resolved any other way. And still in class, there's ones that are less skilled and some that are really incredibly skilled. And it doesn't matter because it's a non-competitive activity.
So it's basically you.
It's right. You. Mm-hmm. It's you. And the instructors can provide guidance for different levels, mm-hmm. or they just say, you know, if you need to take a break, go into child's pose. And nobody has any criticism of that. They're all focused on what they're doing and their breath and their movement.
Do they pass the block around so you can, you know, put your hand on a block, get elevated? That's what I remember, the blue block.
Yeah, the blue block. Some people use it regularly. It depends on their inherent flexibility, and a lot of that is not necessarily how much yoga you do, but just you happen to be born with a short Achilles, you know, or longer legs. I have what I call gorilla arms. I have very long arms, so I can reach things, you know, like my floor easily.
Going to the 2 to 3 classes, are there different methods, or are they mainly hatha yoga, which I assume
they're a mix.
Is the most common?
It really depends on the individual teacher and what they want to contribute. It's certainly not power yoga, but perhaps moving into that. But it really is depending on the individual teacher.
I think what's interesting is that when you say, Denise, that there's yoga for anyone at any level. Mm-hmm. I know that my 90-year-old mother would go to, she was in a care center, assisted living, right down the block from me, so I got to see her every day. But they did chair yoga, mm-hmm. and they moved, right. They breathed. So mm-hmm. there's certain elements of yoga that can spread out over, You can do power yoga, if, depending on your abilities. Mm-hmm. There's yoga for balance, because as we get older, balance becomes agility, balance, things like that. Mm-hmm. So I think that's very interesting. And Tashi, when you talked about 2,000 hours before you started your 200-hour training, what did you see? So here's my question. What did you see in yourself that changed over that period of diving into yoga?
Well, I'd speak to this often, and I find that unlike a lot of other dynamics of what we do on a daily basis, when you allow yourself to go into a yoga studio to be led through a class, there's no part of your mind that becomes peripherally multitasking. Mm-hmm. And people leave a yoga studio after a class, they talk about the bliss and the zen that they feel. And I try to circle that back to, well, did you notice that for the last hour, you have only been solely focused and immersed in one thing? And the real benefit, the real joy is to be able to take that same sort of philosophy outside of the studio and to realize that very little in life is truly time sensitive. There's nothing more important than the people that you're sitting at a table with, sharing time with at any particular moment. And when we find a singular focus, it becomes a lot easier to stay at a pace, at a place of contentment and joy. And so that was kind of the cause and effect. I went in there for one reason, to be physically engaged. And I came to learn that by getting rid of distractions, every part of life became more joyful and a little bit easier to manage.
That's interesting, as you made a transition from competitive tennis to something very much calmer. People don't have to go bing and watch you.
But Denise had kind of made, you know, a similar comment. Yeah. One of the reasons why I did 2,000 classes in such a short period of time was that's the way that I was built at that time. You know, just not to just try something, but to dive fully into it and see how far up into the elevation of any quest, whether it be how good of a tennis player you could become, how good of a musician you could become. It was the same deal. How good of a yogi could I become?
Mm-hmm. That's fascinating. Just a little bit of review for our listeners on the actual different types that are available. So Hatha is that more traditional with 10 or 15 poses and focuses on alignment. And do they do vinyasa here with continuous movement and breathing?
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Okay, absolutely.
So Hatha, that's vinyasa. Mm-hmm.
The Hatha would be very similar in concept to what most people associate with Bikram yoga, which is a very well-known discipline. And that is, again, where you have a little bit of a slower set sequence of postures that you hold for anywhere between 45 to 90 seconds at a time. And then vinyasa is, you know, I would say that those are the two most popular and common types of yoga that you see in America and in our settings. Vinyasa is a series of it almost feels like that old game Simon, where, you know, you hit red, then yellow, then green. You slowly build a sequence of one posture to the next, and then you link that to match the pace of your breathing.
So they're more continuous movement and breathing and more synchronized flow. There was a one I came across called Yin, with deep stretching and poses held for 3 to 5 minutes and only using 5 to 8 poses in the whole hour. My question was, do people fall over?
I'll ask Denise in her experiences. I have been to many yin classes because I actually find yin for my lifestyle to be the most challenging of all yoga, because that is where you truly, truly have to slow everything down to its slowest pace. And if you are someone who has a very active mind by nature, it is a challenge to be engaged in that dynamic.
That would also help your balance too, I guess, so that you don't.
But most of my experience with yin is they're seated or lying. So yeah. And there's props, there's pillows and blankets, so you can get your body in a position that will allow it to relax in that position. And again, doing the breathing at the same time, it should never be a forced thing. It's really listening to your body and allowing it to move into a place of total relaxation.
So when you go to 2 or 3 classes a week, are they different? Are they specifically different, like you try to go to a half a class? Or
I wouldn't say that any of them, they're called vinyasa classes, but it really depends on the teacher. That's why I like going to these different teachers, because they each have something to contribute that I can enjoy. The only thing my body doesn't really allow me to do is a hot yoga. I find it very hard, cardiovascular. I get lightheaded with it, and it takes me hours and hours and hours to recover afterwards. So I have learned that is not good for
me. Just for you specifically?
Just for me, yeah.
And then just to define power at Rastanga, it's more fast-paced and vigorous and does do 15 to 25 poses, similar to vinyasa. Susie, you had another question.
Well, I'm wondering, and it may have already been mentioned, but there seems to be, with all these different types of yoga possibilities and practices, and that there's one element that flows through all of them. Is this true? Is it the breath?
Yes.
And how does that anchor in a human through the process of whatever yoga they choose?
Well, so the name Toshi itself is derived from the Sanskrit santosha, which is the quest for contentment in all moments. And life has bandwidth that we experience peaks and valleys. So much of life is shampoo, wash, repeat with variations on a theme. And so where the breath comes in is trying to kind of have the vision of an accordion player on the hillside who's drawing his hands apart very slowly to fill up with that air, and then pushing his hands together very slowly to create that compression and that sweet music. If you're able to train yourself to stay within that state of the breath cycle, you become more focused and detached from the immediate reaction to stimulus. And as a byproduct, again, it's about trying to find a range of contentment through all that you do. And it's just been found that it's beneficial to maintain a breathing pattern to help facilitate that.
There's a lot out now about the parasympathetic nervous system and how breath, I mean, you take 10 deep, slow, 4 second, 8 second out, and how that affects your parasympathetic nervous system and can reset from all the stress, tension, cortisol, whatever, adrenal stress that's going on. And it seems like yoga has incorporated that for centuries.
And they do have disciplines of different rhythmic and physical styles of breathing. There's opportunities to, you know, close one nasal cavity and breathe in through one and out the other. There's what's called Ujjayi breathing, which is kind of constricting the throat to create a heat with inside the mouth. So there's a whole branch of yoga itself that's built just to the study of the breath or the pranayama.
One of my teachers said that if you are just sitting there and concentrating on your breath for an hour, which is sometimes what her mother would do if she came to class, you are doing yoga because you're uniting the mind with the body. You're doing yoga. Yeah. And that's the hardest thing, I think, to do in yoga, is to allow your body to follow your breath. If you're holding your breath because you're working too hard, then you have to back off. And to have that guidance coming from internal, as opposed to saying, you should be able to do this. You have to experience the letting go of the control.
Very interesting. There's a book too called Breath or Breathe. Mm-hmm. Have you read that? And it talks about, again, how we should not be breathing. The reason why we have so many dental malocclusion problems now is because we breathe with our mouths. But it's interesting, in my Pilates and things like that, they say in through your nose and out through your mouth. And then my daughter gave us this book to read. It was like, you're actually supposed to, you know, try to breathe with your mouth closed. Like I tried to walk up like 5 flights of stairs, and that's hard to walk up 5 flights of stairs with your mouth closed and just breathe through your nose. So it was kind of an interesting aspect or interpretation of breath and what we can do to help people relax too and be in better health.
Yeah, there's a lot of prevailing information that comes out right along the lines, and there's a fad that's been, you know, in the last 6-8 months that I've seen quite a bit, where people will actually tape their mouth shut when they go to bed at night. Yeah. To isolate all breathing through the nose, because again, they do say that there are health risks that come with excess of mouth breathing, for lack of a better term.
Yeah, so we went from nose strips to taping your mouth shut. I have seen that too. It just seems a little, I think it would be annoying, but I guess I haven't tried it. So
I don't do it when I sleep, but I noticed that putting tape over my mouth has always been very helpful for me in social interactions.
That keeps the party clean, as my father would say. This is 88.5 KRFY Pondere. If you just tuned in, I'm speaking with Toshi, a yoga teacher, and Denise Imbricki, a yoga practitioner, and we are discussing yoga to highlight September as Yoga Awareness Month. We've just talked more about the different kinds of yoga. Basically, all of the things that yoga provides for its practitioners kind of helps detach you from your worldly desires and attachments. I mean, I think that was one of the original principles. And listening and getting more spiritual. Reflection on your thoughts and insights. And then, of course, meditation. The poses, I always thought were very interesting, and we don't have to name them all. And so many are incorporated in other kinds of exercise. I mean, you know, child's pose, or you know, down dog, basically, chair pose. I mean, in finishing my exercise sessions, I'd be asked by a trainer to stand and put my one leg above the other and, you know, balance. And that's really good for your balance, too. Are there poses that you think are most useful, and are there poses that you don't incorporate? Again, like I said before, the corpse pose, I thought that was interesting that it actually had a name, Savasana, and you lay on your back, and that's when you, at the end of class, I assume, it's very quiet, and they turn off the lights, and you meditate. And fish pose, just lifting your chest when you're lying on your back. So they all have very interesting names. Mm-hmm. Is one more useful, or how many do you put in your classes?
Well, you had mentioned chair pose, and not to put an impotence on any one particular pose over another and say that X is better than Y, chair pose does have a lot of benefits when it really comes to igniting the body from the inside. In order to hold that position and engage in the way that you do for that, you kind of turn on this, what we call this internal tapas energy that kind of, you know, leads from the gut and spreads through the body in that way. Personally, like a standing forward fold, just mm-hmm. bent over, grabbing my arm, you know, grabbing opposite elbows and letting the weight of my head and neck pull the rest of the body down, mm-hmm. really creates a lot of great decompression for the lower back. Mm-hmm. And then for the more avid practitioners, when you talk more about the hatha and some of these longer holds that you do, a lot of it is about opening up spaces in the body that you don't normally open up and allowing them to be flooded with air. And so there's one posture in particular where you'll be bent over and you'll cup the hands behind the heels. Mm-hmm. And simultaneously, you'll be pulling with the strength of your biceps to pull your body down while pushing with your legs to straighten the legs. And what that does is it just opens up all this space in the lower back while at the same time flooding it with breath and flooding it with air. So again, not to say that I would know on an intellectual level, if any particular pose is considered to be the apex pose and the most beneficial, but those are three that immediately kind of jump off the page as far as having noticeable and discernible benefit.
And again, from other exercise, planks and plows and cat-cows, and a lot of those poses are incorporated in mm-hmm. other disciplines. Denise?
For me, I don't do any standing on my head poses. I have some neck issues, and I think a lot of people image of yoga, oh, can you stand on your head? we never do that in the class, or it's given an option at some point if somebody wants to go ahead and do that. But you can just forget. You can go through yoga your whole life and never do a headstand. That's fine. For me, the chair pose is something that when we do it in class, I find it challenging because you're really working hard on your quads. But I'm a telemark skier. And so in the fall, when I'm working really hard on those chair poses, I just remind myself that this will help me come snow season at Stoitzer.
That's interesting, because I was just going to ask you that, if you found that yoga was a good way to get ready for ski season.
Yeah, and in fact, I know a couple times if I'm going down and I sort of semi-lose my balance and get it back, I thought, I'm not sure I would have been able to get my balance back if I has not been doing yoga. It really does help with that.
Have you ever done it on a stand-up paddleboard?
No, sometimes I find the floor challenging enough to be on one leg.
It's interesting when people were talking about doing yoga on, mm-hmm. on subs. Mm-hmm. Toshi, what do you think about that?
There are a lot of interesting dynamics that they've added to yoga in the last decade. There is certain retreats where you can go to where you'll do yoga with a goat standing on your back. There, so again, there are some unique and interesting things. I think back to one of the points you made earlier, though, is when you talk about crossing over into other dynamics, whether it be telemark skiing or so forth, I think once you do become more familiar and practiced in yoga, you start to see it in so many other things peripherally. You'll be watching ice skating and you'll notice that the way that a skater has got their body aligned, or you're watching a ballet and you'll see the way that a dancer has got their body aligned. It's very similar to what you experience in some of the classes.
Very interesting. What's available here in Sandpoint? Do they actually advertise or on their schedule put that it's this kind or that kind, or is it kind of a combo class?
Personal experience, I work at Sandpoint Hot Yoga, which is over by the Dairy Depot. And so we do have a collection of classes listed, and then they do list what style each particular class is, as well as the teacher. I've only practiced at Wii Yoga, but I've only practiced there a couple times, but Wii Yoga is right in the heart of downtown Sandpoint, and they have the same dynamics. They have a range of classes that are offered with different scheduling. I believe there's yoga at the Yellow Room on their schedule at times, as well as at the Y. So there are quite a few resources within mm-hmm. town, but with each of them, you do generally have an idea, or at least a little bit of a set of what their schedule and what each class offers is available.
Mm-hmm. Denise, what do you find?
Same thing. I go to class as both we and the Y. Okay. Yeah.
Susie.
I think almost every gym in town, we'll call it gym or club, athletic club, mm-hmm. such as the Y or 7B, mm-hmm. has yoga classes. Mm-hmm. And it seems like it's always the teacher's kind of way of doing it. And they may incorporate several different styles of yoga into their own practice that mm-hmm. they give. But my question is, there's so many online yoga teachers nowadays. Mm-hmm. They're actually really good classes mm-hmm. you can take. And then there's books, the old books. Mm-hmm. I think there was one by Heidelman. I can't, mm-hmm. it's really old. And mm-hmm. way back in the 60s, you could get that because there weren't classes available. But what is the benefit? I think I know the answer, but I'd like to hear it, to having a actual teacher see what you're doing in person mm-hmm. classes compared to online or something like that?
Well, I think there's two important foundational pieces to that. And one is feeding off the energy of others to maintain your own discipline. Mm-hmm. I think that the same thing can be said for the workplace. There's so many jobs that exist that if we were able to stay task-oriented, you wouldn't have to drive to an office setting to be effective in them. But by being in an office setting, or by being in a class where you've got 15 other practitioners near you, the ability to maintain your level of concentration and engagement there's far less distractions, personal distractions, to take you away from your practice. And then to what you mentioned, you know, as an instructor myself, I will get into a certain place in the room and I'll start to give cues, and then I will actually look through the room and look at the bodies. and notice what sort of tweaks and alignments need to be made. And it's very easy when you look at what the pose that someone's holding to be able to say, hey, bring your knee in a little bit so it tracks a little bit more above your ankle. So I think that, again, it's having the eyes there to be able to see for the practicer where they can make alignment elevations and improvements.
Yeah, so proper positioning or doing it properly is so important, because if you're not doing it properly, then you're not getting the proper, whether it be a stretch or you may be actually hurting yourself.
Yeah. For sure, yeah. And I agree with Toshi. There's an energy that's in a class provided by the teacher, but it then disperses throughout the students in the class, too. At the beginning of the pandemic, We Yoga had classes that you could sign online. Up online through your computer. And because we didn't have Wi-Fi at the time, I had to stretch my computer cord into our back mudroom, so I was between the wall and the washing machine, and there were certain positions that
it's great.
Yeah, I could not do certain poses because of the limited space, but it really just did not give you the same sense of community.
Yeah, it's kind of like in COVID, there was this big discussion about, well, gee, all these people can work at home. Isn't that better than wasting the time driving? And then you'd go, well, yeah, there's a point to that, but there's also a point to feeding off each other and being able to walk down the hall and ask a question and what we used to, in medicine, call the curbside consult. Susie?
It sounds like the sense of community has immense benefits. Yeah. And I think we're finding that true in many aspects of life, like you mentioned, the workplace, kind of holding us together. And or at a concert where everybody's focused on one song, it's community and it's a strengthening thing for humans in general.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a favorite form? I mean, we kind of talked about this a little bit before, but...
Wherever I am at the time.
Okay. And the favorite pose, we did talk about that. It was interesting when, Denise, you brought up the different levels of people, and that's kind of what I've read, too, is that there are often different levels, or when I've looked at calendars that different studios have had, it certainly says that it doesn't matter if you're a beginner or advanced, you can all come to this class. It's not like this class is restricted to advanced students. But how do you work with people of all different levels?
Basically, I start at a most common denominator and work up from there. Which is to say that when I say a breath and a posture, most people know how to generally get into that posture. And then from there, I start to add alignment cues to say, hey, create a sensation of pushing down with your feet and pulling inward, and you'll feel engagement in your inner thighs. And so when you build it in that way and you start at what is the foundational and most, the lowest common denominator, everybody can practice to the level that works for them. When you talk about balancing postures, there is a sequence of postures that I'll do for balancing where at any point along the way, the practicer can say, okay, this is where I'm going to hold this pose and maintain it right here. Mm-hmm. And then I'll say, okay, well, if you'd like to take it a step further, maybe try adding this. Mm-hmm. And then maybe try adding this. And then that way along the way, everybody finds where their edge and where their moment is in the time.
It's kind of like, again, back to that stand-up paddleboard. I remember if the looks like there are waves coming, it would be I'd have to tell myself, core, core, to not get distracted and go flipping off.
There's one thing I'd just like to mention for me about yoga. I think it can apply really to everyone. That, as Toshi said, it helps you focus at the moment on what you're doing. We were just in a set status for the wildfires that were going on. And I found myself going in all kinds of different directions, packing up the house and being anxious all the time. But when I went to yoga class, that all fell away. When I was in yoga class, I was there mentally, physically, emotionally. And in fact, before I retired 16 years ago almost now, I was in a really stressful job, and I found my 2 or 3 times a week yoga classes where I'd go in almost hyperventilating, so stressed out. And I think if I hadn't had those yoga classes, I'm not sure I would have got out of there without a heart attack.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It was just incredible. I'd go in there, and when I came out, I felt my blood pressure down. I was not, you know, breathing heavily anymore. And, it's been really important for mental health, I think.
That's amazing. Did you think about moving into the yoga studio to spend the night?
No, we have enough friends that offer their spare bedrooms. Thank you.
Well, one thing that comes to mind is there's, when you're talking about breathing and bringing down the stress, I think, do doctors ever prescribe yoga as a solution to high blood pressure? I know there's respirate breathing that came out of the Mayo Clinic, and it's similar to yoga, you know, what I mentioned before with the 4, 4, and 8. Mm-hmm. And I just think that, or for osteoporosis, that's yoga right. That's specific, not standing on your head, but other ones that give, you know, what is needed for osteoporosis to get calcium into the bones or to whatever. So I'm wondering if this is a question for you, Dr. Joanne. Is this something doctors could prescribe? I think yoga would be a good thing for you to do.
Well, it's interesting that I mainly worked with children, and even I think it was in the early 2000s, and they're doing it more now as a prescription for play because everybody's so worried about the kids don't play outside anymore. And so that kind of became one of our speaking points in somewhere between 2000 and 2008. But, you know, for yoga too, I would imagine, I mean, there are some doctors who are very, very straight, you know, academic medicine, and there are others that are more into holistic medicine. And so anyone who's more into, and it could be a functional medicine specialist, or it could be a physician who has more of that healing touch to their life and to their practice, that, you know, does tell you to do things like, you know, take a yoga class, take Pilates class. Like I said, I've done Pilates since about late 90s. And now our instructor not only does Pilates, but she does a form called gyrotonics, which has machines, but a little different machine.
I thought you were saying you wanted to add to that somehow.
Well, not necessarily want, but I would say that one of the fortunate things that we have is that, you know, there's many doctors that have yoga as a recommendation, but a prescription is not necessary. You don't have to come in with a letter that says your doctor told me to, you know, I let everybody into the class.
So there's no sales tax, because sometimes if you got a prescription for a massage, then you didn't have to pay the sales tax, at least in Ohio, I think.
Well, we'll definitely, if we aren't already, we will incorporate that going forward for sure.
Denise?
I belong to the Y with no charge because of my Medicare supplement.
Yeah, silver sneakers. So,
mm-hmm.
That's great. Did you have any now?
Not at this moment. I was just thinking about, I've heard of, you mentioned karma yoga and household yoga, householder's yoga. Has anyone heard of that? Or what is karma yoga? We don't know. Okay, that's okay. Yeah.
Karma gets you back into, you know, talking more about the breathing, what we're really talking about. So it's all really combined.
Mm-hmm. My hope is that there are enough people who are exposed to the physical practice of yoga that it then inspires them to take a deeper look into the philosophical and the spiritual aspects of yoga. There's a set of disciplines called the 8-limb path that's involved in basically combining breath with posture, and then using that to find a place of sensory, you basically turn off your own senses. And oddly enough, as you move towards these states of meditation, you get to a place to where the way you truly meditate is by not trying to. And so when you see people enjoying an hour-long class of yoga, and the feeling that they get towards the end of it when they're laying in corpse pose and they feel just connected and blissed out, a lot of that is the synergy of the mind, the body, and the breath all working in unison together. And we feel it as a natural byproduct in the moment. But I think it's, you know, my hope is that that becomes a gateway for people to open up into finding the principles behind why that happens within the body, and then using a little bit more of their own intellect to help guide them into a deeper state of connection and meditation.
So how do you deal with inflexible people? And I don't mean inflexible thoughts, but limited anatomic flexibility at any age, especially the elderly. In modern dance class, when I was in junior high, I had the narrowest V-sit. So just looking at the lotus pose sometimes makes me hurt. And like I said, I do Pilates and gyrotonics, and we might talk about those in another conversation. But back to inflexible, tight-jointed people.
Which isn't uncommon. There's a, you know, in the Surrender series, it's very common to do what's called pigeon pose. And when, as a tennis player and somebody who, with so much lateral movement, that pose was intellectually painful just to think about. But it is a progression. And over time, you recognize that today's discomfort is tomorrow's ease. And you find that you become more flexible within these postures through time and through breath and through just taking a slow approach to it. And then there's also things that we do within the class itself, where just a little bit of a tiny push here or a little bit of an additional leverage there, whether it be, like you said, from the blue blocks or maybe just a teacher giving a little bit of pressure to the back of your spine in a forward fold. These are things that also help to move people to increasing their flexibility.
But I think the important thing is for people to realize that we each have a different body and where it will go, even with all kinds of effort and time, is going to be different. Some people are just more naturally flexible, and those that aren't. I remember in that first workshop I took, I'm looking around, and I studied ballet for 18 years, and I was always doing stretching, even with my decades of weight training. But I always had a flexible hamstrings. And I'm looking around in this class, and we're doing a downward dog, and I noticed there very few people had their heels down. And so after that session was over, I said to the teacher, I know, should I not be putting my heels down? Because I was a new yogi at that point. I said, because I'm looking around and other people don't have it. And one of the other students turned around to me and said, that's because we can't. And she was a teacher.
Yeah.
And so I think it's accepting where your limits are, not pushing beyond it, and just being grateful to have what you have.
Okay. So it's a very much a personal.
Absolutely.
Activity and a personal feeling like you've basically getting benefit from it. Mm-hmm. So, well, back to September and Yoga Awareness Month. I thought it was interesting when one of the references said to celebrate, buy a new outfit. It seems a little counterintuitive when we're talking about relaxation, mind-body connection, and the initial emphasis on anti-consumerism. But that's one way to feature it, I guess. But other recommendations made more sense to me, like a clean slate, which means declutter your workout space. So maybe you don't have to be next to the washing machine or between the washing machine. Of course, now that we can go out and do classes. And to spice things up, meaning add a new class or a variety, a new teacher, or perhaps find that online. Again, the problem with online, as Toshi said, you can't be corrected, so you don't know if you're doing it correctly. You could be developing a bad habit. We had a Pilates instructor that you did 5 sessions with him, and from then on, you could just come into the studio and get a card of all the different exercises and do it on your own. And the gal that we are now with said she was horrified when she first, got a job with the owner of the studio because, people were doing things improperly, and that, so they didn't always have good form. And therefore, they may be hurting themselves rather than be getting any advantage. And do it outside. Get outside or hike. Like Toshi said, he's going to hike the mountain today, which is a really fun thing and beautiful scenery. tap into the yoga community and give thanks. As you said, we're all individuals, and we basically need to know that we're doing it so that we can succeed, whatever that level of success is. Any other comments? Anything we've missed? Recommendations?
I think the one thing that I would add is that, you know, there were a couple mentions of being a new practitioner or being slightly intimidated by what you might be getting into. And the challenge that I made to others once I started becoming involved in yoga was, hey, come with me to one class. Come with me to one class and I will never bother you about it again. Because ultimately, it's kind of like the old Lay's potato chip. I bet you can't eat just one. And I always feel like it might take a little prodding to help somebody get through the door the first time. But then from that point forward, it's either something that you develop a natural joy and interest for, or you don't. And most people do.
Denise?
I'm just so grateful to have found yoga. It contributes so much to my life. It's really a place of acceptance in the classes and appreciation for your fellow yogis just to be there. You know, it's a community. You come into your class on Monday at noon and you feel like you've come home to family.
Very nice. Do you feel like, do you do any weights anymore or aerobic training? And do you feel like it's added to your aerobic tolerance?
Well, knees have prevented some more active aerobic things. I certainly find yoga doing strength as part of strength training. If you've ever tried to, you know, hold a plank for 3 minutes, that takes quite a bit of strength. Yeah.
Susie?
Well, I'm a little bit inspired here. I've been thinking about yoga. I've done it in the past, but kind of put things on hold. And with my life as I look forward, there's going to be space and time for that. There should always be space and time for it, it sounds like. So, yeah, I'm a little bit inspired here. Thank you so much for coming in and talking to us today.
Appreciate the opportunity. Thank you very much as well.
Thank you.
A sincere thank you to yoga teacher Toshi and practitioner Denise Zimbricki for sharing their knowledge about yoga and its many benefits. And thank you for listening to Medical Musings with Dr. Joanne. Please do remember that this is a medical information show. It does not substitute for discussing your concerns with your medical provider. And please tune in next month on October 6th when we'll be talking about bully prevention awareness and the social emotional support of our youth with Dr. Becky Meyer, superintendent of Lake Pondere School District, and Joshua Barnes, licensed clinical social worker at Kiniksu Community Health. This is 88.5 KRFY, Community Radio for North Idaho.